Welcome to
BirdWorld.com. The podcast for those involved in designing, developing, and running websites. This is what everybody waits for. Hello and welcome to the 28th episode of BoAgWorld.com, a podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites. And welcome back. Indeed. I don't know whether that's welcome back to us or to them.
Yeah, hi Paul, haven't seen you in weeks.
No, yeah, it's been a bit like that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, as you may have noticed, although I don't suppose you really have because you really follow this podcast that obsessionally, we've been away for, 2 weeks? We missed two episodes, haven't we?
Yeah, we went skiing at the end in the Alps for the end of the season, and then we went over to Bermuda or Barbados, I can never
remember. I get confused when you travel as much as us. No, but unfortunately I've posted the truth on BoAg World already, right. So people know that you're making it up.
That's just in fantasy Marcus land, isn't it?
Fantasy Marcus land. So basically we've been busy.
Yeah, Paul's too slow and can't do his work fast enough, so...
Blame me. Thank you very much. So it's a good position to be in.
Yes,
because
a good problem to have.
Yes, we have been ridiculously busy, and in fact, some of the work that we've been busy on has actually been work that's won via this podcast. So, you know, it's kind of the consequence of the success of the podcast.
Yeah, I can't remember what the outcome of that, whether we were allowed to mention it or not. I think we are, aren't we?
I don't know. I'm scared to, because every time we seem to mention it, yes, we are. Yes, we are allowed to mention it. So one of the websites we were doing was, which came to us via this podcast, was the National Air Traffic Services.
But you're not allowed to call them that.
No, we've got to call them NATS.
Yeah.
Buzzy Bean. No, I'm not allowed to say that. Sorry, you know, NATS is in... No, doesn't matter. Yeah, so their website's now live, so you can check that out if you won't necessarily be interested in National Air Traffic Control, but you might be interested in the fact that we designed it, so you can check it out at nats.co.uk, so that's NATS. They just went through a big rebranding exercise, and we helped them apply that branding online, and used all the latest lovely kind of web standard-y stuff and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we've also used Flash on that site, which is quite interesting, as we're going to be talking about that next week.
Very nice use of Flash, because you go, do they? Oh, yes, they do.
Subtle.
It's very subtle.
I know. Understated.
It's a good-looking site. I mean, we didn't set the original, the branding guidelines, all the stripes that it uses.
No.
That was done by a Flash agency in London called Wolf Olins. But
I was so excited when I found Wolf Olins. Because when I was at college, they were my kind of idols. So anyway,
but yeah, very cool site. I like it a lot. I think we've done a good job. And what they were kind of worried about us mentioning it from the point of view that we might complain about them as a client, and they've been one of the best ever.
I know they have been such a good client. I think that's partly, and I like to blow my own trumpet here.
That's because of me.
It's because of me. I think it's partly because they, Matt, who was our primary point of contact, has been reading BoAg World, and he's listened to the podcast and stuff like that. So he kind of already knew the way that we worked. So. But they're really slick as an organisation. Their decision making was good, you know, because they had it was new branding. They had relatively complex decision making process over things like design, because it had to go via Wolf Olins and various people.
I got really quite concerned about that as well.
But it was so slick.
They were great too.
They were great.
Everyone was great.
Everyone was great.
We were great. They were great.
Everybody's wonderful.
Oh, slapping myself on the back right
definitely.
Now. Not that I had anything to do.
No,
with it
you
at
had
all, but...
nothing to do with it. Anyway, so there we go. Very good project. And that's one of the reasons why we're busy. I noticed that the other reason I was busy was one of the other clients that we're working with. And he actually spotted on our website that we were too busy to podcast and said, that's my fault, isn't it? So he's feeling guilty right now. So there we go.
It's worth saying, while we're on this subject, and we've got to sort of, you know, stretch things out as we always do.
Yeah, because perish the thought we would get onto the point.
Yeah, exactly. This is always the busiest time of the year for us. So chances are we'll have our skiing and Barbados holiday
every year.
Every year at this time.
Could well be. Right. So thank you for everybody that emailed or posted on the website. Thank you for all those people that were in mourning because of our absence. I'm sure that isn't normal behaviour, but there you go. And thank you for all those that sent various emails and comments and questions and things like that. There were loads of them, and I haven't been able to respond to any of them, and I am really sorry. But I have read them all. If you are looking for a response, or if...
Send it again.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. If you want a response, send it now when I've got a bit more time to deal with it. Although after saying that, I'm actually really busy this week. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so send any of the emails that you want responses to again, and I will try to deal with them this time round. Okay, this week we're going to do things a little bit differently. Well, I suppose it's a little bit differently. We're going to still stick with our normal sections and everything, but... I kind of think about this week as being a bit of a tutorial in preference to a pointless waffle, I think is probably the normal.
I expect people are cheering then. Yeah. Aren't they? That's what they want, Paul.
A bit of a tutorial. Well, basically, we're going to look at the... Last week we talked about general rules about web accessibility. We've talked about accessibility before. We mentioned things like the WAI guidelines. Yeah. But I'm very conscious that a lot of people go off and look at the accessibility guidelines and go, oh, flip, what the hell's that about? Yes, yeah. Marcus is covering his eyes and sticking his fingers in his ears, which he didn't manage to quite do simultaneously because that would have been very clever.
I reckon I could.
I just stick my
thumbs in my ears, which are far too big to do that.
This
so
is so sad. Right, yeah, so...
I've missed Monday mornings down here. And what a lovely drive it was down as well.
It's so pretty today.
I should be out. So I've got to take some 360-degree panoramic shots.
Around here, have you?
Not here. On the South Downs Way.
Oh.
Winchester to Brighton, that kind of way. Today would be perfect.
It would have been perfect.
I shouldn't be here.
No, you shouldn't. We could go and do it this afternoon.
It'll have clouded over by then and
anyway,
started raining.
We've got a lot of criticism for our pointless waffle. I'm going to bring it back onto subject. Like a good boy. Right, because I've been slapped over the hand or whatever you're slapped around with. Yes, so tutorial. So we felt that basically it was worth going through the guidelines and actually dealing with them step by step, looking at every single checkpoint. Blimey, this will take time. No, we're going to go through it at a fair old rate. Just so that when you look at the list, you're not intimidated and put off of trying, because it looks intimidating when you first look at this list of checkpoints, but the reality is it isn't too bad, and it's not a black art, and it's not complicated. So basically, if you're a client who has put in their brief, we want it to be WAI compliant, but don't really have any clue what that means, then hopefully by the end of this, you'll have a bit of a better understanding of what that means.
Yep.
If you're a developer that has been asked by a client to make a site WAI compliant, and you're going, I don't know what I'm doing, then hopefully by the end of this, you should know what you're doing as well. So that kind of sums up what we're going to do today. So as a result of that, I thought it would be good to start with a related techno buster. Okay, so I thought as our techno buster this week, we would do Acronym City.
Hey.
Because there are more acronyms than you can shake a stick at when it comes to accessibility. So I thought we'd do a few of them, look at them and what they are. So we're going to do three. We're going to do WAI, WCAG,
WCAG,
and W3C.
Yep.
Okay. Because they all interrelate, and it'll give you a bit of background that'll hopefully help with the discussions further on. W3C is the World Wide Web Consortium.
Oh, you're doing it out of line on my screen.
Okay. No, I'm sorry, I'm doing it all wrong. The WAI is the Web Accessibility Initiative. And the WCAG, W-C-A-G, is the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines.
Yep.
So, the WAI, the Web Accessibility Initiative, is an initiative or working group within the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, whose mandate is to improve web accessibility. So think of them as a kind of a working group within a bigger organisation.
And they're the people that came up with WCAG.
Yes, but we'll come on to that in a minute.
Okay.
So the W3C is an organisation made up of various groups of members. I think there's like 400, 600, something like that.
Very important people.
Who create standards on the web. So they include Google and Microsoft and Adobe. Tim, what's his name, that made the web? And
Tim Southampton
like
University Berners-Lee.
Yes.
That man. See, I plugged Southampton University in there.
Yes,
one of
Southampton
our
University is one of our clients, so Marcus has to plug them. So the W3C are the organisation that creates standards for the web. So the WAI then were commissioned with making standards for accessibility in particular, and they produced the WCAG, WCAG guidelines. And basically they... were first published back in 1999, believe it or not.
Mm.
That's a long time ago now, isn't it? And they're far from perfect, these guidelines, but they're a damn good starting point. They're kind of primarily focused on disabled users, but they also are helpful for those accessing with alternative devices like cell phones and that kind of thing. Cell phones, I'm sounding American, aren't I? It's probably because that's what I read off the site.
You watch so much American TV.
You blame it on that, do you?
Yes.
Mobile phones and the like.
Yes.
So it's not perfect. There is some stuff, and as we read through the list later, there'll be occasions when I'll go, nah, just ignore that one. Mm. And that I will back those reasons up, I'm sure, with intelligent arguments.
Yes.
But there is actually a new version that's coming out relatively soon from the W3C or actually the WAI, the Web Accessibility Initiative. But they are a hugely slow-moving organisation that takes forever to decide anything.
Is there any kind of hint on what are they going to be streamlined?
Yeah,
four times bigger.
No. There's a draft out.
All right.
I'm going to be careful now because I haven't read the draft, so I'm not going to make up.
See,
things.
I have to edit him again, folks.
My attitude, I have to say, is a bit, well, if it's not out, I'm not going to worry about it. And I think that should be the attitude for people listening to this, that really, come on, let's concentrate with the here and now and not get too carried away with the future. And what we've got at the minute is confusing enough without adding another level of complexity to it.
Yeah, I guess I was just on a, you know, have they taken into account the kind of the ones that don't make a lot of sense?
Yeah,
and that kind of
it seems like it's an improvement from what I've read, but okay. I couldn't tell you the specifics of it.
Cool.
I think that's a disclaimer I should chuck in at this point, that as we go through this list, what I'm doing today is concentrate very much on people that are unsure about accessibility. If you're an accessibility expert, then good on you, and I will no doubt say some things that will upset you today, like ignore the upcoming guidelines.
Yeah.
But that's because I prefer to get people started and get them into accessibility rather than intimidate them and create more black magic around it, if that makes sense.
So,
just bear that in mind. Okay, so there's a bit of background on some acronyms, and that's our Techno Buster section. So let's move on. So there's our main feature. We're going to... As I said earlier, we're going to go through the checkpoints one at a time of the WCAG guidelines, and we're going to look at them all and we're going to understand them. But before we do that, it's worth explaining that the guidelines are split into three priorities: priority one, priority two, and priority three. Priority one is the most basic level of accessibility that really there's no excuse for anybody not to conform to. They're so dead simple to do, and they're not a big strain. They don't cost you lots of money. So everybody should be doing that. Priority two.
Is it worth saying that priority one equals single A, priority two equals double A, priority three equals triple A?
Because obviously having two names is a lot simpler than having one.
I know.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Do you know?
I don't know. It's really annoying anyway. So priority two, otherwise known as double A, is a kind of step up from that. And I think most people should aim to conform to priority two. And then there's priority three, which is if you're super enthusiastic about accessibility, go for this one. And, you know, you're really showing off to your friends kind of thing.
first contentious point of this section.
Showing off to your friends by being priority three compliant. No, I do think, I mean, to be honest, if you've gone to the effort of being AA compliant, you might as well be AAA, because it's not a huge step on. I suppose it's a bit more fiddly, but...
This is when it gets down to my difference, my understanding of this. I mean, it's fairly good, but there'll be the difference between two and three for me.
Yeah.
I'm learning today, so it'll be quite interesting.
That's good then. So it's also worth saying that kind of when you first look up the WRI guidelines on accessibility, part of the problem, part of the thing that makes them so frigging confusing is the fact that the checkpoints aren't organized neatly into priority one, priority two, priority three. They're like all over the place.
Mm.
And you don't actually, it doesn't help you to get your head around it. But after a little bit of searching, I found a page that actually does organize the checkpoints via priority, which is so much clearer and really helps. It's got a long, awkward URL. So what I've done is I've set up an alias to it. So if you go to accessibility.boagworld.com, so no www, just accessibility.boagworld.com, you'll be taken to the W3 site, C site, and you'll be able to see all of the checkpoints organized by priority. And that is the list that we're going to work through today. So Marcus is going to kind of drive, and he's going to read them out, and I'm going to hopefully explain them. So Marcus, do you want to kick off with priority one?
Yeah. 1.1, provide a text equivalent for every non-text element, for example, via alt, long disk, or in element content. This includes images, graphical representations of text, including symbols, image map regions, animations, for example, animated GIFs, applets and programmatic objects, that was a hard one, wasn't it? ASCII art, frames, script, images used as list bullets, spaces, graphical buttons, sounds, played with or without user interaction, standalone audio files, audio tracks of video and video. There you go. Basically, stick some text on it if it isn't text.
So that is a classic example of why accessibility guidelines feel bloody confusing.
Yeah.
Because all of that lot basically boils down to...
I should have practiced that beforehand, shouldn't I?
You should have, really. Basically boils down to, if you're using something that's not textual, make sure there's text that explains what it is. That's what it comes down to.
The most important part of priority one.
Exactly. I think probably one of the most important ones, full stop.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're using Flash, if you're using images, I'm not going to repeat the whole list here, but I would have thought Flash and images are the most obvious. Audio and video would be pretty close there as fairly common as well. They need to have a text explanation for them, associated with them.
Absolutely.
So that's not a huge issue unless you're doing something very complicated in Flash, or if you build your entire site in Flash.
Indeed.
Well, but we'll come on to that next week.
We will, yes.
In our great Flash debate. So that's that one.
Okay. Ensure that all information conveyed with colour is also available without colour, for example, from context or markup.
Okay, so that one's a bit simpler to understand. Mm-hmm. Basically... often you say things like, form is a good example of this.
Yeah.
When you validate a form, you often say things like, please complete the fields marked in red.
Mm.
Well, that's no good. You can't say just that.
Yeah.
And you can't just show fields marked in red. Now, obviously, this is because some people have colorblindness. So in this instance... The answer is to, fields that are marked in red and bold, for example. You can also use colour to show current sections. You know, a link changes to yellow to show that it's a current section. Mm. So kind of avoid that kind of stuff. Make sure that it works without colour. The other reason here is where it says, for example, from context or markup. Another example would be if a user... was viewing your site without style sheets enabled.
Yep.
There are situations where if people are using an old text browser that they wouldn't have that kind of colour promotion. Or if they're using a mobile phone, for example. Notice I said mobile phone. This
yes.
So there are lots of situations where colour might not be displayed properly, so don't rely
on
it.
Would bold be displayed on that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Even on a sort of text browser?
Yeah. he says, and now I'm worried. Damn, you caught me out on something. I'm
1.2 and I've got him already.
I think that'll be right.
Okay.
Carry on.
Right, 4.1. Clearly identify changes in the natural language of a document's text and any text equivalents, for example, captions.
Okay.
What does that mean?
Yeah, this is it rarely will affect you unless you're working on multilingual sites. This is basically you need to specify where the language changes. So, for example, let's take the National Trails, one of our sure. clients, yep. okay? They have parts of their site in Welsh. Some of their things
quite a lot,
will be in
yeah.
Welsh, yeah.
yeah.
So let's say you had an English document which for some reason was which included a quote in Welsh. Let's say a signpost was in Welsh and they wanted to put the signpost description on the website. You would have to say that the language has changed in that case.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I'm unsure about the reason why.
Because there would be some speech browsers, for example, that would suddenly be thrown because what they thought was an English document now suddenly changes yeah. into okay. something else.
Okay.
So it's very rare that you need to worry about that unless you're dealing with multiple languages. Now notice, I think I'm correct in saying this, notice at this level it's not saying necessarily that you need to establish the language for the entire document, but I think that's good practice anyway, to be honest. The technical methods of how to do that are available actually from this page that we're looking at, the accessibility.biogold.com. If you click on any one of the checkpoints, it will, it's got a link next to each one, and that will actually show you how to technically do this. So I won't bore people with that here.
Cool. Okay, next point is organise documents so they may be read without style sheets. For example, when an HTML document is rendered without associated style sheets, it must be still possible to read the document. How important is that?
This is an important one, especially if you build with web standards. I think it applies pretty much equally anywhere. In fact, in some ways, it's probably easier with web standards. But if you turn the style sheet off, what happens? Mm. I would strongly advise you to get hold of the Web Developers Toolbar, either for IE or for Firefox, because that allows you to easily turn the style sheet off and see what happens. I mean, some table-based sites can look terrible, with all the CSS turned off. At least with web standards-based sites, you get nice semantic code, which is clean.
The problem is you know, how you interpret it, because organised documents, what does that mean? You know?
Yeah, well, it's...
So it, one's slightly misaligned, you can still...
Yeah, you know. And I think that is the key. It's all right if it's slightly misaligned, but it needs to be readable.
Sure. Okay. Next.
Yeah.
Ensure that equivalents for dynamic content are updated when the dynamic content changes.
Okay.
What does that mean?
Well, let's say you were running a content management system, okay?
Yep.
And the page title was pulled out of the database.
Yep.
Okay. Let's say you changed the page title to something new for a particular page. Now, if you'd used images for the page title, okay, and you used image replacement, so in other words, if there is dynamic text, you don't want the dynamic text to get out of sync with the image. So you don't want the text to be the right new title, but the image to be the old one.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
So it's common sense, really. I mean, that isn't a huge accessibility problem. It's blooming obvious.
Well, let's move on then.
But I have seen situations, actually, you say that, it is blooming obvious, but it's easy to miss. I've seen a lot of situations where somebody's replaced an image, but they haven't updated the alt tag. That happens.
Okay. Next one. Until user agents allow users to control flickering, avoid causing the screen to flicker.
Right. This is because you know when you get on films sometimes you get this film contains strobing lights and if you have photosensitive epilepsy run away now. It's kind of the equivalent of that. It's not just that for people with photosensitive epilepsy. It's apparently if you've got dyslexia, a flashing on a screen can make it much harder to read text and things like that. So that's basically things like animated GIFs, flashing animated stuff in Flash, So anything, yeah. anything basically that flashes or moves, the user should be able to disable that.
Okay.
Or you need to avoid it.
It's, again, hard to interpret what's flashing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is open to interpretation, but I mean, generally speaking, I think it's good practice to avoid. Having a flashing ad like you see on many, many sites.
Yeah.
Compare that to the subtle animation that went on about the Nats site we talked about earlier, which fades gradually. It's not going to cause a big problem, but a flashing in your face is
going to. I'm probably going off the track a little bit here.
Oh, that's a surprise.
How do the automated checkers like Bobby test something like that?
They can't. Which I'm going to come on to later, and I'm going to talk about automated checkers. Because
I've just read the next point. How on earth can an automated tracker test this? It can't.
That's part of the problem with automated trackers. They do have serious limitations. So they can only test things that basically have got an obvious yes or no answer. Anything that's subjective, they can't test.
Yeah, like this.
So they can check Sorry, you were leading on nicely into the next point and I ruined it then. They can test things like alt tags. Does an alt tag exist? But they can't tell whether that alt tag is actually relevant to the image or not.
Yeah, and they can't tell if there's even anything in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm moving on. Use the clearest and simplest language appropriate for a site's content.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily agree with that.
Go on then. Yeah. Why not?
It depends what the site's about.
Yeah, appropriate to the site's content.
Okay.
So, for example, if you are designing a site that's aimed at quantum mechanic physicists...
But why shouldn't you be allowed to write that in a flowery way?
You can still write it in a flowery way. It's not saying, it kind of does say that. I think this is a good one. It's talking.
I'm not saying I disagree with it as a kind of general practice. Yes, I think it is right.
Yeah.
But should it be something that you fail on?
Yes, because it has accessibility connotations.
Yeah.
People have cognitive disabilities.
Yeah, true.
So people with dyslexia, for example, may have problems. Other people have much more serious cognitive disabilities.
Yeah.
Now, okay, it's giving you a bit of an opt-out here because it's saying irrelevant to the site's content. So, for example, if you're aiming at quantum mechanic physicists, you're not expecting any of them to have serious cognitive disabilities. They wouldn't be quantum mechanic physicists if they did.
Yeah.
But if it's a general public site, then you need to be much more aware that people do have some learning difficulties.
Yeah, fair point. Okay, but yeah, again, it's like, well, what is clear and simple language? Well, that was all the general points for priority one. Now we're moving on to, and if you use images and image maps, provide redundant text links for each active region of a server-side image map.
Yeah, they don't... I mean, you know, sometimes you get maps that are clickable.
Yeah.
Well, basically, there are some situations where those areas won't be clickable, okay? So, for example, some text browsers obviously don't render the image. But also, sometimes with some browsers, there can be problems of mouse control. If you can't use a mouse, you can't use a keyboard to tab through those different regions.
Right.
So, basically, you need to put some links in as well that basically do the same thing as the map.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, next one. Provide client-side image maps instead of server-side image maps, except where the regions cannot be defined with an available geometric shape.
Do you know, I don't know this one. I don't really get this one.
Side instead of server-side.
To be honest, I can't think of a situation in my 10-plus years of web design where I've ever done a server-side image map. Image maps are normally done on the client side. So this has never been a stumbling block for me.
Okay.
So I would leave it at that. If somebody does know of a situation where they think this would be relevant, then go to baragwar.com/podcast, find episode 28 and post a comment there, because it would be interesting to know if anybody can think of a situation where this is ever an issue. It might be one of the examples of a legacy thing from 1999 when this was written that is no longer relevant today.
Yeah, okay. Right, now this is still on priority one, obviously. If you use tables, For data tables, identify row and column headers.
Yeah. So basically, makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot needs explaining on that. Basically, if you've got a table that contains data, in other words, if it's not being used for layout, if it's using it to convey information, make sure that you mark up that the headers correctly, so that, because what you get with speech browsers is they'll read things linearly if you don't interrupt it. So you'll get, say if you had a column that was name, a column that was address, and a column that was telephone number, a speech browser would go name, address, telephone number. Paul Boag, 01, yeah, oh no, it's address, Seven Fields Oak, whatever, yeah. 01258, blah, 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 all right? Which obviously doesn't make sense when you do rows and rows of them. But if they're marked up correctly, it will say name, Paul Boag, address, Seven Fields Oak, telephone number. So it'll make a lot more sense.
Yep. Okay. Next point. For data tables that have two or more logical levels of row or column headers, use markup to associate data cells and header cells. Isn't that what you just said?
Yeah, no. It's where you get, sometimes you kind of get nested data that it has more complex relationships with one another, and I won't go too much into the detail of how that works, but it's the same principle, but okay, it's more specific to a more unusual situation.
Right, next one. And if you use frames, priority one. Who uses frames these days?
It's surprising.
Title each frame to facilitate frame identification and navigation. So that's so you can bookmark them and stuff like that.
Yeah. There's not a lot else to say on that one, really. And if you're still using frames, you shouldn't be.
Yes.
So hopefully that never will be an issue.
Okay. And if you use applets and scripts, priority one, ensure that pages are usable when scripts, applets, or other programmatic objects are turned off or not supported. If this is not possible, provide equivalent information on an alternative accessible page. Yeah, makes lots of sense.
Yeah, so scripts, applets, and programmatic objects basically means Flash, Java, JavaScript, and the alike. So the ways that will affect you, I'm thinking from a client perspective, don't use, if you're going to have fancy drop-down navigation, for example, it has to work without that fancy drop-down navigation. If you've got Flash files, it needs to, you know, this site needs to be accessible without those Flash files, and you still need to be able to get at the content. Yep. To be honest, this overlaps quite heavily with the first point that was
exactly
made.
Yeah, I expect the next ones will as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you use multimedia, priority one, until user agents can automatically read aloud the text equivalent of a visual track, provide an auditory description of the important information of the visual track of a multimedia presentation.
Now, this is quite an interesting one.
Yeah, where does it say it? Visual track provide an order of the important information.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do the whole lot?
No, not for priority one. You need to pick out the appropriate stuff. But it is still quite a big thing. If you're having a video where you need to make sure the audio track on that video does cover everything that you know, everything that's key, any bullet points that appear, any key information about what's going on the screen needs to be available as well. So potentially this could be quite a big job depending on what's going on there.
Yeah.
But to be honest, if you're producing video anyway, you know, you're probably investing quite a bit of money in producing the video. So, but I suppose sometimes you use third party videos that don't provide that. I guess you could get around this to some degree by referring back to the previous one and providing an alternative accessible page. In my opinion, that's probably as good as putting an audio track, or not as good, but it is, you know, bearable. You know, if you need to explain things via text, then you can do that in preference to producing an audio commentary. Yep. I'm sure that there will be people out there now sitting there groaning and rolling their eyes, but in a pragmatic real world where you're using a third-party video, you can't add additional audio to it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best that you can do.
Okay, next point, still on multimedia. For any time-based multimedia presentation, for example, a movie or animation, synchronize equivalent alternatives, for example, captions or auditory descriptions of the visual track with the presentation, so subtitles have to go along with it.
Yeah, so this is another way of dealing with the point that was before. You know, if you're not going to do an auditory track, then you can use, you know, subtitles, etc. So that's cool.
Okay, right, next one. And if all else fails...
Which is great.
Priority one. If, after best efforts, you cannot create an accessible page, provide a link to an alternative page that uses W3C technologies, is accessible, has equivalent information or functionality, and is updated as often as the inaccessible original page.
And is updated as often as the inaccessible original page. Mm. That's the key. And there was a big trend for a while where everybody created a separate accessible site, but then it didn't get updated. If all else fails is the key word here. I think it's much, and I think ultimately a bit of extra investment up front is going to be worth the effort compared to the ongoing cost of maintaining two separate pages.
Yeah.
So I should avoid that if at all possible. So there's priority one.
Yeah. Priority two looks like there's loads more.
Yeah. Well, it will be more. It'll start getting more complicated. Yeah,
three is less than two, though. So. Okay, here we go. In general, priority two. Ensure that foreground and background colour combinations provide sufficient contrast when viewed by someone having colour deficits or when viewed on a black and white screen. Priority two for images, priority three for text.
Okay. So what that's saying is that you need to have, for priority two, you need to have sufficient contrast in images between foreground and background. Fairly obvious. But what constitutes sufficient? This is a very hard one to define. And again, this it applies, I think, more importantly to priority three when it's text.
Yeah.
You know, often people complain, oh, that greyed out text, I can't read it against the white background or whatever.
On a lot of monitors, you can't.
No. Laptops are particularly bad for this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always having arguments with Chris Scott, our MD, whose laptop seems particularly bad for this, where you can't see, you know, can't see background detail. But the problem is that sometimes there are other monitors like Macs tend to be much more contrasty and things appear much darker on them.
Mm.
And so you have the opposite problem there, that everything looks too dark.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult line, this one. My general response is, if you build with web standards, then if you start getting complaints about the contrast, it's easy to change universally across the whole site. So just be aware that contrast is a big feature. And I would say that this and one that we come on to later about JavaScript are the two major, scalability, are the two major features of priority two.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next point. When an appropriate markup language exists, use markup rather than images to convey information.
Mm. This is quite an interesting one. This basically has some quite large ramifications if you take it to the extreme. Where appropriate markup exists, use markup rather than images. So, for example, every heading, every piece of text, never use graphical text. Now, from a design perspective, that's quite harsh because until all Windows PCs have clear type, which is its anti-aliasing effect, turned on by default, it means that your website's going to look quite crap.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And what, just in case you don't know what anti-aliasing is where you get nice smoothed off edges on the text. In preference to those hard pixelated edges that you get.
But even saying that, there's huge limitations from a graphical only point of view to having dynamic text. You know, that we build a lot of sites with content management systems. We've talked about this in the past about, you know, what was it, FIRS or something, the flash image replacement thing, where you can...
Cipher.
Was it?
Yeah, we were getting confused between... Yeah, anyway.
You know, you are limited to... you know, you've got a limited amount of fonts, for one, and they still don't look as good as a graphical a graphical version.
So it's a difficult one, that one. I would probably argue that actually you can still be priority two compliant and use images for headers as long as you're using... As long as you're doing it with web standards, again, where you're using an image replacement technique.
Yeah.
So, again, this is emphasizing how important web standards are. The reason I think it's all right to use an image replacement technique is because there is the dynamic text there as well. It's just hidden and replaced
exactly,
by an image.
Exactly, yes. If it doesn't, if you haven't...
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, there are arguments. It depends on how literally you want to take this. So that's up to personal conscience, so this one, I think.
Okay. Right, I don't understand this one. Create documents that validate to published formal grammars. What does that mean?
That basically your what you write has to be grammatically correct. And again, there are different styles of grammar, but it says a published formal grammar. Again, this goes back to cognitive disabilities and things like dyslexia and stuff like that.
Sure.
That
okay.
if you the grammar is bad on your document, it's hard to read. So hence no website that I ever write content from can be can be priority two compliant because my grammar's appalling.
But what if your site is aimed at, I don't know, teenagers who text a lot?
And you use things like text short, you make it hip street talk.
Exactly, yeah. Obviously something we'd never do because we can't.
Because we're neither hip nor streetwise.
But, you know, there's an argument that says that it's more important to engage the majority of the audience than it is to make it all the Queen's English.
Yeah, and I mean, this raises a general issue about accessibility. That accessibility, like every other aspect of web design, has to be done in the global context. Mm. You know, I mean, there are other examples that we'll come across later where... Well, or even the previous example about images. Sometimes you have to go, I'm not going to conform to this checkpoint because I believe that the design considerations or the content considerations outweigh this checkpoint. And I think, which we were saying last week, I think one of the problems is that people get obsessed with ticking the boxes and saying, I am priority two compliant or I am priority three compliant. And they end up having to compromise... other aspects that in some cases are more important in order just to tick that box, which is dumb. Web design should be holistic. It should take into account every aspect from design to programming to usability to accessibility, everything. And they should be balanced and weighed against one another. Mm. So, yeah, I think there are some situations where you go, no, I'm going to ignore this.
Okay.
That's why I believe sites should have an accessibility statement saying why they've done what they've done in preference to a Bobby compliant, graphics or whatever.
Got a question about the badges, the Bobby badges.
They're silly.
Well, I saw on a site the other day, and I really can't remember which one it was, and I wouldn't name it even if I could. But it had a Bobby badge on it, which said. WAIAA priority one on the badge. So I thought, well, somebody's just a graphic designer has created this and slapped it on their website.
Make sense,
So I who says that you're allowed to put a badge on it? Who
tests?
Does anyone check it?
Nope. You can. That's why they're so pointless.
Yeah.
There are W3C ones as well, and it's down to you. But,
it was a W3C one. It was a W3C.
Right, there are two. There are W3C badges and there are Bobby badges.
It was
a Bobby compliant one.
It wasn't a Bobby compliant. It was a W3C AA priority one.
Right. Well, then, that doesn't even make sense.
It's not right, is it?
No. So, they're pointless. An accessibility statement that says why you've done what you've done is ultimately better.
Okay.
Anyway, let's move on.
I can't remember where I got to. Use style sheets to control layout and presentation.
So,
well, there you go. You have to use web standards.
Yeah, that's done. Yeah, I mean, that would be my interpretation of that. You cannot be priority two compliant if you are doing table based design.
Moving on.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say on that. And if you disagree with that, not you, Marcus, the listener, if they disagree with it. Then let me know. Explain to me my ignorance on this, because I read that as if you are going to be priority two compliant, you need to use web standards based design that completely separates design from presentation.
It doesn't say completely or all
content
on it
from presentation,
does it? It doesn't say use style sheets to control all layout and all presentation.
No, that's true. Yeah, you could argue that, but come on, that's stretching a point a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
let's move on. Next point. Use relative rather than absolute units in markup language. Markup language attribute values and style sheet property values. There you go.
Ah, the guideline 3.4, the bane of my life. It's hard to explain to a client that if they want to be priority 2 compliant, that basically means their site needs to be scalable.
Yeah.
So because what this checkpoint is saying is that you need to use relative rather than absolute values. In other words, you can't say, I want this column to be 600 pixels wide. You have to say, I want it to be
30% wide.
30% wide. Now, there is something called EMS,
yeah,
which is a relative value still that can be a kind of a scalable text value that you can use to specify widths as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can do. So you can have something that appears to be fixed width unless the user increases the font size, and then the whole site scales up along with the increase in font size. So that can give kind of the effect of a fixed width site. But generally speaking, this is referring to scalability.
That's quite cool, actually.
Now, there is a little complication to it.
What, about pixels?
Yes.
Yeah.
There is somewhere on the W3C site, buried deep down, it does imply that pixels are actually a relative value. And the reason it implies that they're a relative value is because depending on how big your screen is, that pixel is either bigger or smaller. Yeah. If you have a 48-inch screen by some miracle, then, you know, and it's still only 800 pixels by 600 pixels, then that pixel is bigger or smaller, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so in theory, a pixel is a relative value, but I think that is a real... basically, you know, that's living by the letter of the law and not the spirit of the law. This is about making sure your site scales to fit the window that the user is viewing it in. And I even think to some degree using EMS, which only scale when the font size scales, is that it's not really with the spirit of this guide, this particular checkpoint. But I think it is an acceptable solution. Ooh. I've seen that you're supposed to mute your computer, Marcus.
I did, and forgot.
Do you know we received an email telling us off for that as well?
What? Du-du-dum.
Yeah. You were particularly mentioned on that. I've never had this problem. Anyway, are you ready to move on to the next one? Or you're not you're not going to MSN. You're not going to reply. Move on to
Let's
the next
move
point.
On to the next point. Okay. I have to say, go away.
No, don't. Just go on to the next point, and then you can say it when I'm speaking.
Okay. Use header elements to convey document structure and use them according to specification.
Okay. So this is things like using H1 tags, H2 tags, things like that. So there are HTML, there are certain tags that are used to specify headings, right? H1 being the most important heading, H6 being the least important heading. Mm. And so often they're not actually used within... you're a bad man.
I was turning it off, and they got in just before I was turning it off.
So often, web designers, if they've got a heading, they don't mark it up as a heading. They just make it look graphically big or whatever. And this is saying you need to use proper semantic code to mark up headings, which, again, you know, if you're using web standards and you're doing it properly, your code should be semantic anyway. By semantic, I mean descriptive of what the content is.
Okay, makes sense. Mark up lists and list items properly.
Exactly the same, sure. Really. You know, you need to, if something is a list, make sure it's marked as a list.
Okay. Mark up quotations. Same. Do not use quotation markup for formatting effects such as indentation.
Same again. And this is a general principle that a lot of times people use tags because it creates the visual effect they want rather than it being for to describe the content. In this case, it's saying sometimes people use the what's called the block quote tag to push something in and indent it when it's not even a quote.
Sure. Okay. Ensure that dynamic content is accessible or provide an alternative presentation or page.
Okay, this is quite an interesting one for things like Ajax or stuff that's pulling in content dynamically, right? Is that content accessible if JavaScript's turned off?
No.
So for Ajax, this is quite a big issue. So you get the kind of, you know, the kind of situations where that might be relevant.
Okay. Until user agents allow users to control blinking, avoid causing content to blink.
Right. So this is
change presentation at a regular rate, such as turning on and off.
Right. So this is basically very similar to the flashing one, except basically I think this was created because at one stage Microsoft introduced the ability to make things blink in the browser.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. Until user agents provide the ability to stop the refresh, do not create periodically auto-refreshing pages.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Basically, don't make a page refresh unless the user has got the ability to control that. Now, you can argue that they do have the ability because they can press the stop button, but it would be really annoying having to press the stop button every few seconds. So, you know, what we're talking about here is don't have pages refreshing all the time. And again, there are a lot of examples of, you know, these fancy Web 2.0 sites which refresh automatically. Mm. And I guess in some situations you want them to, but not always, you know. So you need to be built.
Interesting to see these in the new version of the guidelines.
Yeah. I mean, you basically need to give the ability to turn it off.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I won't read all the next few. It's because they're exactly the same wording apart from what they're referring to, which is, in the next one, it's stopping auto-redirect.
Yeah. So, again, it's where you go to a page and you're automatically redirected onto another page.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite important because it breaks the back button.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Is about spawned windows do not cause pop-ups or other windows to appear.
Without the user having control over it.
Yeah.
So in other words, no on-load pop-ups, but you can do an on-click pop-up, but you do need to inform the user that that is going to happen.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't click on a link and it suddenly spawns a new window without it saying this is going to open in a new window or something like that.
Okay.
So that's quite an important one. It comes up quite a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, next one is use W3C technologies when they are available and appropriate for a task and use the latest versions when supported.
Yeah. So, again, this is a really woolly one. It says things like appropriate and available and things like that. Basically, this is saying, I'm going to put my huge bias on this. This is saying use web standards.
Yeah.
But it is actually saying other things as well, but that's the one that I want to push.
Okay. Next, avoid deprecated features of W3C technologies.
Right.
Like what?
Well, there are multiple versions of HTML, okay?
Right,
Each one supposedly replaces the previous one. So, for example, there are some deprecated tags, in other words, tags that will still work in a browser, but you shouldn't really be using anymore. One of those is the target tag. That specifies a new window to open things in or whatever like that. You should avoid using that because it's deprecated.
Yeah, it's the bold tag as well. That changes, doesn't it? It should be strong.
Yeah,
and things like
those
that.
Kinds of
okay,
things.
Okay, cool. Divide large blocks of information into more manageable groups where natural and appropriate.
Again, this is just general. Good practice, really, isn't it? Just to, you know, group content in logical groups, put it together, break it up, it improves scannability, makes content more readable, which is why it's an accessibility issue from a cognitive point of view.
Yep.
It's common sense, really. If you're not doing that anyway, then you need to be shot.
Okay.
Not that I'm a fundamentalist about this at all.
Okay, next one. Clearly identify the target of each link.
Again, this is kind of what we were saying earlier about spawning windows. It's about telling the user if you're going to be going to a new window. Basically, keeping the user informed about what's going to happen when they click on a link.
Right, okay. Provide metadata to add semantic information to pages and sites.
Right, so metadata is information that isn't necessarily visually appearing on the page, but helps to describe the page and describe the content. So, I mean, people often think about metadata in terms of search engines.
Yeah.
So everybody thinks, I need to add keyword metadata to improve my search engine rankings, which probably isn't true, but there are other reasons for having it there.
Okay. Sorry, I lost my place. There we go. Provide information about the general layout of a site, for example, a sitemap or table of contents.
Fairly obvious, really.
Okay. Use navigation mechanisms in a consistent manner.
Hallelujah. Yes. Yeah.
That's really rather important.
I mean, that's as much a usability issue as it is accessibility.
Mm.
You know, obviously it is relevant for people from an accessibility point of view, but certainly from a usability point of view, don't have navigation moving around a flipping page the whole time.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, we've probably ranted about that an awful lot. So
yeah,
we'll
don't need to dwell on that.
Right, okay, moving on from the general priority to points, this is, and if you use tables, although you shouldn't be. But no, I think you are allowed it for their data.
Read this.
Do not use tables for layout unless the table makes sense when linearized. Otherwise, if the table does not make sense, provide an alternative equivalent, which may be a linearized version.
Yes. Now, see, interesting. This kind of contradicts my point earlier about not using table-based layout, because this seems to give you permission to do it.
Yeah.
But it does discourage it, and it does make it clear that, you know, it needs to make sense, you know, if it's not laid out in its nice table, basically.
Yeah. Okay. The next one, if a table is used for layout, although it said earlier you can't, do not use any structural markup for the purpose of visual formatting. What's that mean?
Yeah, it's a bit vague, that one, isn't it, really? Basically, it's saying, I don't know how the two bits link. If tables are not being used for layout, or are being used for layout, it's kind of a separate thing from the second bit, which is do not use any structural markup for the purposes of visual formatting. And they're almost contradictions, because if you're using tables for layout, then that is structural markup that is being used for the purpose of formatting. So I don't really know on this one. Probably what it's saying here is that don't use things like H1 tags to make something big and bold, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like we might just allow you to use a table, but that's it.
Yeah, these last couple feel like compromise. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, moving on again, if you use frames, priority 2. Describe the purpose of frames and how frames relate to each other if it is not obvious by frame titles alone.
Basically, add more information.
Yeah. Okay, and if you use forms, priority 2. Until user agents support explicit associations between labels and form controls, for all form controls with implicitly associated labels, ensure that the label is properly positioned.
In other words, make sure that your label is next to your input
none
box.
None of that.
Well, no, none of that. You do more visual stuff.
That's great, isn't it?
You really want to be doing a video cast, don't you?
I do, I'm working towards it, slowly.
You do get some bizarre situations where sometimes you want the label to be nowhere near the actual input box. There are weird times when you might want to do that. This is saying you shouldn't do that if you want to be priority 2 compliant. It very rarely becomes an issue.
Right. Okay. Next point. Associate labels explicitly with their controls.
To me, this sounds like exactly the same thing. I don't really understand what they're getting at, the difference here. If someone can enlighten me, please do so.
Okay, next one. And if you use applets and scripts, for priority 2, for scripts and applets, ensure that event handlers are input device independent.
In other words, if you have additional information pop up on rollover, make sure it also pops up on focus. In other words, it needs to work without a mouse.
Okay.
Because, you know, a number of times where tooltips and things, you know, when you have fancy tooltips come up, and they only work if you roll over, not if you focus with the keyboard.
Right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Next one. Until user agents allow users to freeze moving content, avoid movement in pages.
Right, so we're getting a bit stricter now. Mm. We've gone from flashing and blinking to movement full stop. So that has some pretty major implications with things like flash and stuff like that. You know, you need to be able to freeze and stop that movement from occurring. So basically a pause button.
Yeah.
That's quite a strict one.
It is, isn't it?
And I don't know whether we've always complied with it.
Yes, I'm sort of wriggling on my chair a bit about that one.
Yeah, it's interesting to reread some of these. Yes. You kind of forget some things. That's quite harsh.
Yeah. Moving on. Okay. Make programmatic elements such as scripts and applets directly accessible or compatible with assistive technologies. Priority 1 is functionality. If functionality is important and not presented elsewhere, otherwise priority 2.
So now, again, this is really kind of being strict here, and it's saying, look, you know, things like your scripts, your applets have to be, have to work with things like speech browsers.
Yep.
If they don't, then you need to provide alternative versions. So it's really kind of, you know, being strict here.
Sure. Okay. Ensure that any element has that has its own interface can be operated in a device-independent manner.
Okay. So there are situations where you, I mean, Flash, for example, has its own interface, its own, you know, controls and things going on within it. Some Java applets, you know, have their own controls within it. And it's saying whenever basically you have anything like that, perhaps you have a pause button in a Flash movie, they need to work with mouse and keyboard.
Oh, right. Okay. Sure. That's, yes, it's device independent. I'm thinking browsers and things like that. But yeah. It's actual.
Yeah, physical device, yeah.
Okay. Right, final priority 2 point is for scripts, specify logical event handlers rather than device-dependent event handlers.
Again, this seems to be repeating itself here. You know, it's all about not using the keyboard and a mouse the whole time.
Okay, priority 3 checkpoints. General ones to start off with, not quite as many as priority 2. So,
thank goodness, yeah. this is turning into a huge
marathon podcast.
I knew this one would be a long one, but I think it's useful that, you know, there's somewhere which kind of goes through each point and provides a bit of help and support on them. And hopefully, you know, people will find it useful. I hope so, anyway.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Here we go. Right. Specify the expansion of each abbreviation or acronym in a document where it first occurs.
Right. So basically explain what an acronym or a document is. And there are tags that a web designer can use to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They should know how to do that. There are examples on the site. So.
Sure. Okay. Next one. Identify the primary natural language of a document.
Okay. So remember we were talking about languages earlier. This is where you should be definitely doing it for priority 3.
Okay. Create a logical tab order through links, forms, form controls, and objects. Well, yes, please.
Yeah. How often do you get a form where you're tabbing through and it suddenly jumps off to some bizarre location?
You've gone from address line 1 to gender or something.
Yeah.
Or back to county.
Just so dumb. Okay. So that's fairly odd. I think that would be priority 1, personally, because it annoys me.
Yeah. Well, is it really hard to do?
No, but so it's things like, you often get it in things like Flash files.
Well, Flash really struggled in previous versions to tab at all, didn't
it? Yeah, and then you get, you know, you have to specify the order, and if you don't specify it right, etc. And also in table-based design, it becomes a problem as well, because you're jumping between columns and things like that. So.
Okay. Righto. Next, provide keyboard shortcuts to important links, including those in client-side image maps, form controls, and groups of form controls.
Now, this is something called access keys, which are basically a little tag you can put into a page that allows you, using the keyboard, to jump to important bits of the site.
Yep.
There are some problems with this. There are some inconsistencies in how browsers apply these access keys, and also how you find out about them. Generally speaking, I'm going to come down in favour of them, but I know that there's some people that would say ignore this point. I say include them because it's not a lot of effort to include them, really, and you just need to have a page, probably the same page that's your accessibility statement, that actually just says what they are. And then if somebody's using the site regularly, they can use those keyboard shortcuts if they want to.
Grand. Okay.
The other thing that I do do on that is I often put in at the top of a page some links to key, you know, skip to content, skip to navigation or whatever else, and then just hide them visually so they don't screw up the design, but they're still usable by people that are using speech browsers or text browsers, etc.
Okay. Next point. Until user agents, including assistive technologies, render adjacent links distinctly, include non-link printable characters surrounded by spaces between adjacent links. Sorry, I'm losing the ability to speak.
Well, also, that's making
please translate,
really
Paul.
Complicated.
You've got to
make sure there are spaces between links.
Yeah.
And why they just couldn't have said that. Basically, so that... Because one of the problems that you have is that sometimes it can be hard to know where one link stops and another starts, if they're abut to one another. Mm. Also, if you've got multi-skill problems, that can create problems clicking on them. So try and space your links out.
Okay. Provide information that users may receive documents according to their preference. Example, language, content type, etc.
Okay. Is that fairly obvious?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, basically saying, you know, provide alternatives.
Sure. Okay. Next one, provide navigation bars to highlight and give access to the navigation mechanism.
All right, let's have a look, see what more information on that one. I can make some guesses, but let's have a look at some techniques for that. This is a good thing about this site, is you can click through and get some additional information.
Mm.
I think basically that's saying things like highlight the current page of your navigation to show where you currently are and that kind of thing. Also about providing consistent locations for navigation. It's a bit woolly, that one. I think that can be interpreted in lots of different ways. And I think any sensible use of usability will conform to that without you having to try too hard. But,
yeah,
you know, someone else might have another opinion. So feel free to add a comment to the site.
What's a navigation bar?
Well, I mean, it's having navigation area instead of, it's like, you know,
creating
you
a horizontal. Yeah, this is the navigation.
Yeah, this
rather
is the navigation area.
Texty bits.
Yeah, because you do get some sites where you just get these massive links all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't have it grouped together as a navigation bar. And I think that's what this is getting at, is
sure,
make sure you do that.
Okay.
There aren't many sites that don't. So. Yeah.
Okay, next point. Group related links. Identify the group for user agents. And until user agents do so, provide a way to bypass the group.
Right.
Okay.
So there's 2 points there. First of all, if a page has a load of related links, mm-hmm, you know, other things that are related to this document, make sure you group them together.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't rely just on body links. You need to group related links together, mm-hmm, which is quite interesting that we kind of do that from a usability point of view, mm-hmm, anyway. And secondly, make sure that if a speech browser is reading through the page, it doesn't read through every single, mm-hmm, one of those links on every page. Mm-hmm. Allow them to skip past them and get onto decent content, because it will get, yep, flipping annoying otherwise.
Absolutely, yes. Okay, next point. If search functions are provided, enable different types of searches for different skill levels and preferences.
Right, advanced search basically deals with that one.
Yeah, but so is that a necessity?
Well, yeah, I don't know whether it is really. I think that's a bit of a kind of... But we're on priority three here, so we are at a fairly high level by this stage.
Okay, all right.
And I think what it is actually, you're thinking of it the wrong way around. You're thinking, do we really need an advanced search? But what this is really saying is make sure there's a basic search, please.
Sure. Okay.
An easy-to-use version.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Place distinguishing information at the beginning of headings, paragraphs, lists, etc. So...
Yeah. What is this getting at? I'm not really sure.
It's saying what the paragraph is about.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Descriptive.
Oh, I know what it is. Yes, yeah, sorry. I just, my mind went blank. Yes, it's front loading, which basically is summarise what you're going to say before you say it.
Yeah.
Good practice anyway.
Definitely. Okay, provide information about document collections in that documents comprising multiple pages.
Yeah, it's about grouping stuff together into sections and into a logical hierarchy.
And saying that's what you've done.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Provide a means to skip over multi-line ASCII 2 art.
Yeah, think that's probably irrelevant now. Do you remember when people used to draw pictures using ASCII characters
and
text? Not really happening very often these days.
Not that I've seen, no.
Sometimes you get it in emails still, but...
Yes, you do, actually, yeah, true. All right, moving on. Supplement text with graphic or audio auditory presentations where they will facilitate comprehension of the page. Ooh, blimey. What, every page should have an audio voiceover.
No, what it's saying here is that sometimes if you're trying to communicate a complex idea, an image says 1,000 words. It's saying use images where appropriate to you know, explain complicated stuff. It's like, ugh.
Mm, yeah, okay. Create a style of presentation that is consistent across pages.
Again, flipping obvious.
Okay, right, now to the more...
It's the fact that you don't have to do that until priority three. So that's real high-end accessibility stuff there, isn't it?
Yeah, good point, yeah. All right, next bit is moving on to sort of more specific stuff. This is if you use images and image maps, priority three. Until user agents render text equivalents for client-side image maps, map links provide redundant text links for each active region of a client-side image map.
We've had that earlier.
Yeah, I'm sure we have.
Provide alternative text on image maps, or alternative links, basically, so if someone can't click on the image map.
It's server-side, priority one. This is client-side.
Oh, right. I would say do it all the blooming time, personally.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And if you use tables, priority three,
yep.
Provide summaries for tables.
Yeah, so basically you can associate a little summary tag with each table that explains what the table's about.
Okay. Provide abbreviations for header labels.
Yeah, basically if you're, keep your header label short, but you can then explain them, you know, with a longer description.
Okay. Until user agents, including assistive technologies, render side-by-side text correctly, provide a linear text alternative on the current page or some other for all tables that lay out text in parallel word-wrapped columns.
So in other words, basically, you need, if you think about a table which has a series of columns in it, if the table isn't rendered correctly by, you know, browsers or whatever... Mm-hmm. That is, all of that will crunch up and look and so be unreadable. So you need to do a readable alternative, sure. Basically. That, again, that's one that I've missed before. I have to say, that's interesting.
Okay. And the final point.
Hurrah! The end!
Which we don't agree with anyway, but there you go. Yes. And if you use forms, priority three, until user agents handle empty controls correctly, include default placeholder characters in edit box and text areas.
I think the key there is until agents handle empty controls correctly. There used to be a problem where some browsers, if there was no content in a text in a form field, it wouldn't render the form field. It would be like it didn't exist.
Ah, right.
That's where the problem came from.
But not a problem anymore.
But it's not a problem anymore. I just ignore that one personally. If you put text in a text box, then a user has to be able to select that text, delete it, and then overtype what they want to put in. And it's a faff, it's a bad usability thing, and in my opinion, a bad accessibility issue as well.
Okay.
So there we go. That about sums it up. I know that was very long and probably very boring, but hopefully it'll be useful to somebody. Somebody somewhere. And now at least you understand what the accessibility guidelines cover. And hopefully we've kind of explained that the accessibility guidelines aren't the be-all and end-all of accessibility. They're a good starting point. There's some stuff in there that we agree with. There's some stuff that we don't implement. Just be clear about what you're saying, what accessibility points you're going to go for. Consider them all.
Yeah.
You know, it's not enough to just go, oh, well, I'm going to ignore that. You know, why are you going to ignore it? Have a good argument. What are you going to say when a disabled person complains about that? Or, you know, whatever, just have a good accessibility statement to back up what you're saying. Okay. So let's kind of just wrap things up a little bit. I want to do a quick web resource review where I basically make a suggestion of something you can check out. We've mentioned Bobby at several times through today. It is worth having a look at it. If you go to http://webacct.watchfire.com. That is where an automated checker called Bobby is. I'm not going to get into a big discussion about automated checkers now, but just be aware that they're good for picking up on some issues, but a lot of those issues that we've looked at today are subjective. You know,
absolutely.
It's a personal opinion. Bobby isn't going to help you with those, but it will help you kind of identify some of the little bits and pieces that are easy to miss, like putting alt tags on images and that kind of stuff. So it's worth running through the automated checkers. It will also prompt you for those other user-based things as well. So it will encourage you to look at those other areas, so make sure you do that as well. So check out Bobby. It's worth a look. Right, let's wrap up. Have a look at next week. Next week's podcast is going to be on Flash.
Absolutely.
The great Flash debate. We're going to have a bit of fun. We've talked a lot about Flash in the past. I've been quite negative about it. Marcus has been quite positive about it. So we thought we would bring it all together and have a nice little debate between us, where he takes the side for Flash, I take the side against Flash. And we
I'm going to win.
Are you going to win, are you?
Yeah.
Well, I actually think, well, as we've got no third party adjudicator to decide who wins, I thought we'd probably try and come to some kind of compromise at the end and find how Flash really should be used.
Absolutely.
In a nice, sensible way. So make sure you download next week's podcast. It'll be a lot lighter and a lot shorter than this one.
It certainly will, yes. Somebody sent me, and I'm sorry, I can't remember your name or who sent it to me, but they sent me. I'll have a look for next week, all right? I'm just going to do one quick one from this. They sent me a link to a website called dumblaws.com, because I started, when I first started doing the jokes, it was Dumb Laws,
yeah,
the people that I'd read. And this is basically Dumb Laws for the whole of the world. Of course, so I can click on the UK. And my favourite one, just flicking through it earlier, was it's enacted by Edward VI, but apparently it's still on the statute books now. Any person found breaking a boiled egg at the sharp end will be sentenced to 24 hours in the village stocks.
And so they should.
Oh, right, yes.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you for that, Marcus.
Not going to say anymore.
Yes. So check out bargirl.com/podcast, select episode 28, and see all the people telling me that I'm wrong. and tune in next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.